Richard Blanco's life has straddled many worlds, Latino, immigrant, gay, and he was only the fifth poet in U.S. history to read at a presidential inaugural. Mr. Blanco's new memoir, The Prince of Los Cocuyos, A Miami Childhood, is about being born in Spain to Cuban parents, raised in Miami, and he relates his unique experience of coming of age across cultures and asking the universal questions of where am I from, where do I belong, and who am I in this world? I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. Great to be here.
You became known to the general public when you read your poem One Today at President Obama's second inauguration, but you had already published how many books?
Three books of poetry, so, yeah.
And any nonfiction, or is that come later?
No, that comes with this memoir, so, yeah.
And this is the first, I imagine, of a couple of volumes of memoir.
I'm hoping, yes.
Because it ends quite a while ago.
It ends right, I always like to say about 16 and a half. But it ends right on the cusp of that moment of becoming, which was really what I became interested in. Also, practically, I thought when I first sat down to write it that I'd go all the way till 42, and I was 8 years old and already had 80,000 words, so that didn't quite work out. So I'm hoping that, the next one will probably be my first trip to Cuba, my first landing in Cuba.
Oh, you've never been?
No, I mean, back then, in time. Oh. Yeah, my very first. I wasn't
born
there.
You were born in Spain.
Right.
Grew up in Miami, but you'd been in Cuba. Also New York. You were so many places. No wonder you were confused.
Well, I'd like to say very, very concisely, as I was made in Cuba, assembled in Spain, and imported to the United States. But we first emigrated from Spain because back then you couldn't emigrate directly to the United States. That's partly why. First to New York City, where I was here, I think that I was about 4 years old. And then we moved to Miami, which is basically where most of my memories come from. Where I was raised and educated all the way to the first time I left was 28.
What year did your mother, father, and extended family leave Cuba?
60. It would have been 67 because I was born in 68. Yeah.
So it was just after the revolution?
No, the revolution was 58.
58.
Yeah, it was 10 years. It was later on.
Their reason?
I think in some ways it was a sort of a quintessential sort of American dream. And that's part of what I try to discover in the book. What was that leaving and what was that sort of Cuban birthright that I had in a way? So I think that was part of it. I think, of course, part of it was ideological as well. They kind of saw, it was 10 years since the revolution and they kind of probably didn't like the way things were going, so to speak. So I think but I think it was both. It was, that promise of a better life, of a better education, et cetera, a free world. Yeah.
You have a T-shirt on with the words, I'm Cuban and can't keep calm.
Yes.
But I have the feeling that more than most hyphenated groups, Cuban Americans think of themselves as Cuban first and the American lesser.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. It's a very sort of powerful cultural rooting, if you will, and that's part of what Los Cocuyos is. In some ways, there's always this shadow over us in the community, and it's like the idea is that don't get too comfortable because we're going back to this paradise, this place where I was from, but I had never been, where the mangoes were juicier and the sugar was sweeter and the salt was saltier. So there's always this sort of sense of this connection back to this motherland, and that's certainly very strong and powerful. And part of what the book is there's two countercurrents. One is I don't know if people really understand that when you're growing up in that culture, there's an initial rejection, right? Because anything that your parents stand for is like immediate grounds for rejection. So on the one hand, I hated being Cuban. This idea of like dancing salsa, no way. My parents dance, that's tacky. I want to be American. I want to be as American as the Brady Bunch kind of thing.
Whereas a lot of Americans want to learn how to dance.
Exactly. And so the other, the exotic is the other. In this case, the other is that mainstream America that Miami was not back then in the 70s. So there's the current of sort of yearning towards that American identity. And at the same time, I'm not even sure if it's a countercurrent or a current that's happening in the same way. It's the discovery of being Cuban and falling in love with one's culture and heritage and birthright that was really part of sort of that journey of becoming, of sort of completing the picture.
Do you think if Raúl and Fidel said, okay, we give up. You could do whatever you want here, and we're leaving. Do you think that many of the Cubans who came here, the older ones who have been talking this way for so long, would return?
I don't think that they would return 100%, but it would be
they
nice.
Keep their
that,
homes in America.
Yeah, be nice to have a little apartment or something on Baradero Beach. But I think if my mother is any example, there's something that she said to me once very significantly a few years ago, and she said, "You know, you're not." She's realized that you're not necessarily from where you're born, but where you choose to die. And so now my father, both my grandparents on my father's side are buried here. She will be buried here. So she kind of realized that she's probably spent as many years here as she has her life, or maybe even more in Cuba, and how she really has finally connected and feels that this is home. And I think that's sort of what I've been discovering as well, because I do inherit that. Maybe someday, you know, there'll be that little apartment in Havana or Baradero Beach. And I think the book is sort of about just the beginnings of sort of that connection with America, which ends up, you know, flash forward, you know, reading that poem to the entire country where a lot of things fell into place. And so in some ways, this book is all the precursors to that little chubby or husky kid, as my mother used to say, that ends up becoming sort of this thing, this poet embraced by America.
Well, you were actually brought up, according to what you write here, more by your grandparents than by your parents, who were off working all the time.
Yeah, my
so that's an even closer connection to Cuba. On the other hand,
yes, true.
You write about your desire as a young boy to celebrate Thanksgiving.
Yeah, well, that you know, that's the quintessential moment, and we just always had a really dysfunctional Thanksgiving, unlike the rest of American families, right?
Well, but, did you do the turkey thing?
We had the wrong food. It was always pork and black beans and rice. We kind of just, they still to this day, my mother sort of still doesn't quite know what to do with Thanksgiving. So in the book, I relate that first American Thanksgiving, that the little precocious, little Ricky, as I call myself in the book, and going to get a turkey on his handlebars and whatnot, in that quest to be American and also to convert his family, to sort of belong to one culture that sort of and not feel that split. So,
but you were not growing up in Des Moines. Much of the feeling of displacement among immigrants is when they go to a place where they are the only one from.
Right, right.
But you were growing up in an area where probably the majority of the kids you knew had similar situations to your own.
That's exactly right. Why was there
such a strong sense of displacement in your case?
Well, it was a sense of a yearning. It was exactly because of that, because everybody was Cuban, as we still like to joke in Miami. We say we love living there because it's so close to the United States. So the effect of that was that Miami sort of felt like this sort of cultural purgatory. It was a waiting ground between Cuba, because we're supposedly going back to Cuba, or the real America that I didn't get to experience. My mythic sense of what the real America is, and certainly that was very powerful, because I did grow up sort of feeling self-assured and with a lot of support and community and a lot of self-worth, but it always felt like America was this distant thing that someday, you know. And so again, it's that caught in between two places that the book sort of tries to negotiate, and as little Ricky sort of tries to figure out, well, am I American? Am I Cuban? Am I both? Am I neither? That kind of.
Were you called Ricky?
Yes, my mother actually calls me Ricky, which is I still have to ask her, like, because that's not a usual. Well, I was named after, according to my father's lore, he named me after Richard Nixon.
Oh, really?
Ricardo.
We'll get to politics in a moment.
No,
I thought it was I Love Lucy. Richard Blanco's memoir is called The Prince of Los Cucuyos, and subtitled A Miami Childhood. Well, you were growing up in an environment where most of the people were conservative and the style was generally macho. And I've wondered about kids who have developed different political viewpoints, or in your case, who realize at a certain point that you're gay. And how do you deal with that?
Yeah, and I think, in my immediate family, they weren't as polarized. Certainly my parents, didn't, have pictures of Castro hanging on the walls. But
you were named after Richard Nixon. But,
well, yeah, because we were in Spain, and I think my father had hopes of, you know, finally emigrating to the United States. So, yes, of course, there was sort of a right, but it wasn't, like, beat over my head or anything like that. What I became interested in this book, Leonard, and I think that's what you're talking about, is the intersection of all those things, right? So I can't separate who I am as a gay man, who I am as a Cuban, who I am as an engineer, who I am as a poet, but that all these things and what fascinates me and what I'm obsessed with is this identity formation and how all those things sort of go into the pot and poof, here comes little Ricky to becomes big Ricky. But one of the things that I call, for example, cultural sexuality that I think of, and my grandmother being the epitome of that, a woman who was as xenophobic as she was homophobic. So anything that was American was also gay and queer. Things like Fruit Loops and Easy Cheese, you know. So, you know, the child sort of negotiating is being American queer? Is if I love Cuba, will I be a man? And sort of all those interesting questions and how they come together. And I got to say, though, the community at the end of the day, I mean, it's been over, you know, obviously decades when all the news of the inauguration broke. The community embraced my sexuality, embraced, you know, my perceived politics without a question. And that was a beautiful, beautiful sort of feeling.
Well, when did you start sensing the truth about your sexuality and how long before you could come out as openly? You don't in this book.
No, not yet. I came out when I was about 24, 25. But what I became interested in here is all those precursors to that. You know, coming out is sort of the last step in these things that start happening from the time you're 5 years old. To answer your question very succinctly, the first time I knew was a $6 million man. And again, was there a cultural component there? Was it because he's like sort of this Americano, you know, guy who's like tough guy and was different than my culture? And was that part of the attraction? But certainly it was piece by piece. And it was interesting because in editing the book, one of the hardest things to acknowledge was that when you're growing up, and certainly I don't think perhaps that's the case now in our day and time, but that there is no language. You don't sit there going, gee, I think I might be gay. You can't even sort of, those words don't even enter your consciousness. And so a lot of the book is sort of the hard part of it was getting those subtle psychological cues.
You knew you were different.
Oh, yeah. But the narrator,
a lot of the kids,
unable to even admit to himself, but yet admitting so far that he was different and he knew that that some part of you knew that this wasn't going to be you, but not being able to admit. And slowly you see the little Ricky get braver and braver as he gets older into his adolescent years and sort of starting to find language with which to question or to bring forward who he really is.
So what was your real community? Was it the school and the things that we usually associate with childhood, or was it the bodega?
The bodega came at 12 because apparently child labor laws don't apply to Cuban exile communities at my grand uncle's. It's a family-owned restaurant. I should explain the title. Cocuyos is named after the store, which is a cucuyito, which are a little loosely translated fireflies, basically. Mm-hmm. They're click beetles, but they're basically fireflies, same effect, same magical effect. And really there is when I really sort of, now I'm 12, 13, 14, 15, I'm working there on the summers, I'm working there after school, and it's that community, that village, and hence the title The Prince, because it becomes sort of my proverbial village. And through the customers, the employees, my family that work there, they sort of raise me and teach me to fall in love with my culture, and I start filling in a lot of blanks. So that current of yearning for America sort of starts being collides with my sort of now suddenly starting to be proud and understanding my heritage. And so there's many, many wonderful characters that are still sort of part of that were essential in my life and still are in a way.
And you write quite tenderly about a friendship that you develop with an employee at the bodega named Victor.
Yes.
You also devote a chapter in the book to a boy named Ariel, who you initially met with his parents. They were refugees who'd fled Cuba as part of the Ariel Botla.
Right. Yeah, I think both characters in a way, and each one represents sort of a step closer to that language, to that admitting. But they also represent, they're also cultural characters in the sense that they're also ushering me in a way thinking about what it means to be Cuban, in Victor's case as well, he's someone who had actually been to Cuba but had a different perspective of Cuba than my parents and grandparents, someone who came later. And so thinking about Pope's revolutionary Cuba and, wait, that's not the Cuba my parents were talking about, but sort of the tenderness of which all those things sort of come together in a loving sort of relationship. But again, not a coming out story. It was all about the getting to that, the possibility of that, and which I find actually more intriguing psychologically. I think, as I said, you know, the step of coming out is really a product of all these sort of subtle, all these relationships. And really the whole book is about different relationships with different people, whether it's my grandmother, my grandfather, my mother, my brother, Victor, Ariel, Yetta from my Miami Beach, from the old, before the glitz and glam of South Beach, and how each of these people sort of, to be cliche, you know, but it takes a village, it takes a pueblo, and all these people's, my relationship and what I learned from them is really at the heart of what Los Cucuyos is all about. And the store is certainly, the grocery store is certainly the sort of the stronghold of all that.
But also, you have a Cuban community that keeps on being replenished in waves.
Yes.
There's the first people to leave right after Castro comes to power, then your family's leaving about 10 years later, and then the Mariel boat lift.
And further, yeah. And then there's a wave.
So they keeps on being replenished, but also change as a result?
It does, because now the people that are coming have known nothing but a post-revolutionary Cuba. And so their perspectives of Cuba are different. It's not about the nostalgia. It's not about some other. It's not the same sense of loss or longing, because they can come here and within a year they can go back. So they leave knowing that there's going to be constant communication and travel, whereas the age of my parents was different. When you left, you didn't know if you were ever going to be able to set foot on that island again. And what's interesting, I think what's happened is that also Miami has changed, because Miami has also become pan Latino, so to speak, as we call ourselves now the capital of Latin America in a way, where all these wonderful Latin American cultures are sort of blending and becoming. And so Cubans are not in Miami no longer like the only Latino group.
And I imagine are becoming more assimilated. You describe a trips like to Disney World and such, where you brought your own food because you didn't want to eat that terrible American food.
Well, no, my mother didn't. I wanted the easy cheese and the cheeseburgers.
She probably was right.
Plus, it was also an economic factor. It was also the fact, you know, all these things again blending together. But I think it's fascinating what's happened with the different layers of exile or immigration that happened in Miami, and what an incredible sort of city it has become and is still becoming. Everything is becoming in a way, and in this book, the city is sort of a character itself too. And part of what I wanted to do was sort of give a little sort of historical anchoring to Miami and Miami Beach before what it's known, what it's become known for in these last sort of decade or decade and a half, and give it some perspective that hopefully I know Miamians will understand, but perhaps others will see Miami beyond the glitz and glam that it's known for now.
So what's next? Back to poetry? Or do you see writing another volume of the memoir?
I think I need to do some poetry because I just feel, you know, that's part of me, and it's sort of my genesis.
Work together? Does one inform the other?
Yes. I think that poetry in some ways is the emotional outline of what becomes prose. And so I think that the deep sort of psychological, emotional work a lot happens in poetry. And I think, at least for me in this process, the writing of the prose, the writing of the memoir is an unfolding and unpacking of that, which is just, you know, can take as pages and pages.
Richard Blanco will be reading and signing books at the Greenlight Bookstore on Fulton Street in Brooklyn on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday at 7:30. And then on Thursday, he'll be reading and signing books at 7 p.m. at the Union Square Barnes & Noble store. His book, published by Echo, a memoir called The Prince of Los Cucuyos, A Miami Childhood. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you, Leonard. And you pronounced that great, by the way. Thank you.
Got it right the third time.